Welcome to the Two Pages of Mystery podcast, now part of the Coil Entertainment Network. I'm your host, Rob Steele. Want to make sure that everyone understands the purpose of this show, and that is to get your stories published. Seriously, it's very hard to become published these days unless you've already been published, which makes no sense if you haven't been, because that means you can't. But you can here. So send me your short stories. I will turn them into ebooks available for free on the website. Check it out right now, twopagesofmystery.com. And I will also turn it into an audiobook available in this podcast. Well, okay, not this episode, but this podcast. So send your friends there, send your family. Better yet, send me your stories. But seriously, go to the website. You can listen to the back catalog of shows and get ebooks versions of the last several stories. And if you really want to, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you happen to buy actual books and buy Two Pages of Mystery, Volume 1, which is, I believe, 23 of the first 25 episodes, now available in a handy hard copy. It's a fun read. That's the whole purpose of this, is to have fun with a mystery. Are you interested in being part of this? Like I said, send me your stories. Yours could make the cut and be in Two Pages of Mystery, Volume 2. This is the part where you might get paid for sending me a story. What a concept, right? Anyway, I would like to thank iTunes, the Google Play Store, and the Happy Hour Network for passing the show along. So, without any further ado, let's get to today's story, where Lieutenant Cooper Wright tries to take a night off and enjoy a hockey game. But let's be honest, if that's all that happened, it would be a pretty boring story. Instead, an IRS agent investigating the team is murdered, and hey, since he's there anyway, he may as well investigate. Sit back and enjoy the story, Open Secrets. I believe I had mentioned I had tickets to come back to the Ice Palace to see a hockey game. I've been looking forward to this game for quite a while. I grew up a hockey fan. Wanted to play when I was younger. Have my name on a hockey card. Cooper Wright, right wing for the Detroit Red Wings. Unfortunately, I was a horrible player, and that never happened. This is the first year of this expansion team in town, and I haven't gotten to see a game yet. But my favorite team is in town. Local team versus favorite team? Of course I'm there for this. This is what sports fans live for. Of course, this is also what some sports fans die for, which is why security tracks me down in the third period. There are times I like my job, but this isn't one of them. It doesn't matter that the game is a blowout. Expansion teams take a while to get going, so it's not really a big shock they're down by 7. I don't really need to see the end of the game to figure out the outcome. What I find in the luxury suite, which is where security led me, will probably take a little longer to figure out. Security filled me in on the way up. The suite is supposed to be used by only one person tonight, an IRS agent named Irwin Reese. There had been some talk around town about how there was some irregularities in how the team was financed and that the Internal Revenue Service would be investigating. Outside the room, I met Harold Parker, the team owner. He says Mr. Reese arrived this morning and asked to work in a luxury suite on the paperwork and to be left totally alone. Parker thought that giving in to this request might make things go more smoothly with the IRS investigation. The only reason Mr. Reese was discovered was by accident. The luxury suites are equipped with a console of buttons that summon assorted staff members, such as security or wait staff. Mr. Reese appears to have fallen on the console and triggered an alarm with janitorial services, who had not been notified about the necessity of privacy. John Bender, the janitorial engineer for the luxury suites, entered expecting to find a spill or similar mess, but instead found the body and immediately alerted security. Or so he says. Granted, he is outside with security and his mop bucket and cleaning supplies caught. It occurs to me that he had enough to clean up in here and dispose of the body, and no one would give him a second thought. So I put him rather low on my list of suspects. I give the body a once-over, careful not to touch anything. I don't even have gloves to inspect the scene with properly. I was told that homicide was called, and they were the ones who informed security that I was already there, although reinforcements are on the way. I don't see an obvious sign of death. No gunshot wound or stabbing. He's not foaming at the mouth, so that rules out several poisons, but not poison altogether. There are plenty that don't leave an obvious trace. I look around the room for any other signs of foul play. There's a lot of paperwork. Looks like accounting spreadsheets. There's two laptops on the table, but neither of them is on. I'll get Officer Tim Fay, our residential tech guy, to take a look at them. Nothing seems terribly disturbed, but there is a trace of something in the air. Regrettably, the smell is gone almost as soon as I notice it. It's not long before the CSIs get here with Dr. Song Ho Young, our coroner, in tow. He looks admonishingly, wagging a finger, but I tell him, "Hey, eyes only, I don't even have gloves." That's when it occurred to me I'm not even properly dressed for an investigation. I'm wearing a hockey jersey and jeans, for crying out loud. I do have my badge. Never leave home without it. But I don't have my gun. Not that I need it at the moment, but you never know. While the CSIs and Dr. Young examine the room and the body, and Officer Fay shows up and is told to check out the laptops, I decide to have a chat with Mr. Parker about what's going on.
"I guess this is the kind of thing all new teams go through. We've been getting rumors all over the place. We finance a team with drug money or slave trade money or gambling or, well, all kinds of things. None of it's true. I made my money on the stock market. Trader for 15 years before I retired. I got investors, too. They're the ones who bought the luxury suites. Not that they ever seem to show up. Most nights they're empty. I'm just glad you can't tell from the inside near the ice that they're empty. That can't be good for morale."
A large bullhorn sounds and the crowd cheers from inside the stadium, and Mr. Parker turns to a security guard.
"Down by 8?
Security guard winces and nods. Mr. Parker closes his eyes and shakes his head and sighs.
"At least we'll get a good draft position."
He shrugs with a humorless chuckle. "Lieutenant, I think I found something." That would be Officer Tim Fay.
"Oh, you think?"
Fay visibly reconsiders. "Okay, I did find something. Check this out." I tell Mr. Parker not to leave the building and return to the luxury suite to ask Tim what he found. Both of these computers lost power when the wall socket blew. Both batteries are fried. But once the plug's fuse was reset, they'll work plugged in. "No, I don't know what caused the fuse to pop yet. I did find this, though. This laptop belonged to our victim. When it was booted up, it restored most of what he was working on. Lots of accounting stuff. But this laptop is what's weird. It's not just that it's old, but it's an old IBM L40SX. This thing is from the early 90s, but it's running the Apple operating system OS X.
"Right, Tim, you lost me.
Lieutenant, if this thing were capable of running a modern operating system, it should be Windows. But this computer shouldn't be able to handle anything beyond Windows 95. If that, there's no way it should be running OS X.
So someone put a new, what, an Apple laptop in an old IBM case?"
"That's what it looks like. I'll take a look under the hood when I get these back to the lab. But look at this. Winamp for Mac opened. It plays MP3s. You know, music files. But look what's loaded on here. Alphaville, Kraftwerk, Colorbox, for crying out loud."
Who the hell is Colorbox?
They joined with another band called A.R. Kane to form Mars. Pump Up the Volume. You know that song. I heard them playing it on the speaker system when I came in. Very popular, back to the 80s. My point is that whoever owns this laptop has a very odd taste in 80s techno music. Tim packs up the laptops and evidence bags and takes them back to the lab. I make my way over to Dr. Young, who gives me an odd look.
"This shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, Cooper, but this man was electrocuted. See these marks on the outside of his wrist? This is a taser burn, but they're too close together. Maybe that's what blew the outlet somehow. I don't know. I'll have to do the full autopsy and get back to you."
This is not how I'd expected my night to end. I was going to spend it enjoying watching my team beat the crap out of the locals. Instead, I have a dead IRS agent, a strange taser, and an obsolete computer that isn't obsolete. I look around the room again and notice there's only one laptop bag. Tim didn't take one. He'd have told me. So if Mr. Reese only brought one computer, then the other might have been here from before. I catch up with Mr. Parker, who is returning to his office, and ask him who the suite normally belongs to. Unfortunately, as it turns out, I know the owner, Onisim Orlov, everyone's favorite Russian gangster slash sports agent. Actually, in my few dealings with him, he's a pretty nice guy. He just has this creepy gangster vibe to him.
I gave Mr. Reese that room because Orlov is out of town. I mean, I did ask him if it was okay. Orlov said that as long as no one touched his jukebox, that would be fine with him.
Jukebox?
Oh no, tell me it's still there.
Parker sounded worried and started back toward the suite, but I stopped him.
Did you see what looked like an old laptop in there?
That was Orlov's. He had it specifically made for him. He said it was invaluable because it was the case of the computer that his father used in Russia. I assured Mr. Parker that the laptop was being taken care of and escorted him back to his office. Then, on my way back to the suite, I placed a call to Tim Fay, who had just made it back to the lab, and told him to be careful with the old laptop. It belonged to Orlov, and explained why it was what it was. Tim said that made sense, and that it may have been the murder weapon. I got a couple cuts on the case when I took it out of the evidence bag. There are these two prongs on the side that was closest to Mr. Reese's computer. They might be the taser you're looking for. I'll have more for you on that when I get this thing open. It's built like a safe. I think my apartment might have less bolts holding it together. That raises an interesting question. Does this mean the laptop was tampered with and someone is really after Orlov? Did Orlov booby-trap his own jukebox? Was Orlov after this IRS guy? Was someone else after the IRS guy and wanted to frame Orlov? When I get to the suite, I sit down to clear my head. There are just too many questions. I'd like to ask Orlov about his laptop jukebox, but he's out of town, and I never actually got his phone number to call. But maybe I have the next best thing. Last time I saw him, he was with an accountant. At least, that's who he claimed she was. Scantily clad, pretty young woman. Could have been a, well, let's say escort. Now, what was her name? Annika. There we go. I call into the office and Detective Manny Vasquez answers. Brilliant. Manny's good at this stuff. I ask Manny to track down an accountant in town named Annika and how quickly he can do it. He puts me on hold. Jeez, I didn't realize our hold music sucked this much. Manny is back in no time and gives me the name and address of an Annika Pasternak. I give Miss Pasternak a call, and a quick conversation later reveals that not only did Orlov weaponize his laptop himself, he bragged about it, he found a way to use the deduction on his taxes, and then he found a way to brag about getting the deduction on his taxes for weaponizing his laptop. That narrows down my questions quite a bit. No one sabotaged his jukebox, except Orlov himself. Now the question becomes, did Erwin Reese accidentally set it off, or did someone set it off on him? Mr. Parker, of course, is at the top of the list. He knows Orlov, and therefore we can assume Orlov bragged about the modification to him. But his motive is a bit wonky. Sure, he'd like the IRS investigation to be over with, but killing an IRS agent would bring more attention to the situation, not less. Parker has to know that. So maybe it's someone who didn't want the team to be here in the first place. But that doesn't really work either. They're here, and if the investigation goes south, the team isn't likely to move. I hate square one. Who else besides Parker would have a motive? Who else was involved?
John Bender, the janitor?
No, it has to be someone I haven't talked to yet. Security said the cameras in the room were disabled at the request of Onisim Orlov. That doesn't surprise me and means we have no footage of the act. The cameras outside showed no one else entered the room after Parker left him there, around noon, until Bender showed up around 9. That means Reese had to have electrocuted himself. But did he do it on purpose? I get a call from Officer Fay.
Tim says he's consulted with Dr. Young, and the laptop is indeed the murder weapon. But Faye says he's found out a few things that Orlov might not have known about. For example, there was a remote activation device. That just means someone can turn it on by remote. It doesn't mean it was necessarily activated by someone on purpose. The other thing I found that might be of interest is who did the modification for him. One of his clients, and the star of the local team, Jonas Saplansky. He was a great player in college, but he was also a computer sciences major. Maybe he's the new suspect for you. That he is, Tim. That he is. Glad Tim found something. I can't think straight on this one. Maybe it's something in this room. I never did identify that smell. I need to go talk to Saplansky. He seems like a perfectly good... Okay. Oh, I might be more tired than I thought. I don't remember the door being at an angle like that. Why would they build a door like... Lights. Very bright lights. And a voice.
Sorry, Mr. Cooper. I didn't realize you were awake yet. Welcome back.
The light goes away and my eyes focus on a fairly cute nurse holding one of those pen lights they use to check patients' eyes. Wait, am I a patient? What the hell happened? I try to sit up, but she places a reassuring hand on my shoulder, and I lie back. I think I manage to mumble something like, "What happened?" when Officer Tim Fay manages to enter my field of vision. I'll explain it, nurse. Thank you. How you doing, boss? I manage to focus on Tim for a moment. He's still a bit blurry, though. Can she explain it? She's cuter than you. I'll be sure to tell your wife, boss. She just stepped out for a coffee. I'm sure she'll be back in a moment. Meanwhile, I'll tell you what happened. I settled back into the bed and tried to look attentive. Never spent much time in a hospital bed. This isn't as bad as I keep hearing about. I mean, I'm not going to rush out and buy one to replace the one at home, but it's not bad. I take a deep breath, and Tim starts his debrief. CSI has found some shards of borosilicate glass under the desk in the luxury suite. That's test tube stuff. Residue on the inside shows that it held an airborne sedative, which is a potent variant of something called dimethylhepatipiran, or something like that. It's been engineered to be a knockout gas. Manny and I picked up the case after you passed out. How long was I out? A few hours. I'm getting to that. Manny and I figure out that the gas was used to knock out Mr. Reese, and he fell against the taser Orlov had put in the laptop. We did some digging and found out that Orlov didn't just brag about the laptop, but he bragged about keeping a test tube of the dimethyl whatever stuff under the table in the suite as a security device. I guess he thought he could gas someone if they broke in or something. We found some of the test tube glass on Reese's pants. So what we figure happened was this. Since there is really only one table to work on in the suite, that's where Reese set up his work. At some point, he shifted, and since he's taller than Orlov, he probably kneed that test tube and broke it. The gas weakened his system enough that when he collapsed against the taser, it killed him. But why was the taser active? We asked about that too. When Orlov isn't in the room, but the jukebox is, anytime the light is switched on, it automatically turns on the taser as a defense mechanism. It could only be deactivated with a code, but no one but Orlov knows what it is. I nod. Or at least I think I nod. Still feeling really woozy, and not sure if I'm completely functioning properly. I talk to the doctor. He says, since you were in the room so close to when the gas was released, it affected you too. Mr. Bender, that janitor guy, is in a room here too. But when the CSIs and Dr. Young and everybody started moving around the room, it dissipated pretty quickly. That's great. Again, I think I say that out loud. I try to sit up, but Tim stops me. Nope. Sorry, boss. You get bed rest at least for the rest of the night. Doctor's orders. I slump back. I guess I'm too tired to argue. By the way, did you get to see the end of the game? I'm pretty sure I shake my head no. Oh, boss, you should have seen it. Final score was 9-8. That was the most miraculous comeback. You should have seen it. I think my stomach just dropped out. Seriously? I was in the building for something like that and I didn't get to see it? No, boss, 8-0. But if you fell for that, it's proof you need more sleep. I wasn't about to argue with logic like that. Besides, these hospital beds aren't that bad after all.
I hope you enjoyed the story. If you have any comments, questions, or want to submit your own story, contact me through the website, twopagesofmystery.com, or just email me at twopom@steel42.com. I've been Rob Steele, and you've been listening to Two Pages of Mystery. So until next time, keep 'em guessing.